6 Music on the BBC Sounds app and discover all our latest shows, sessions and mixes.
6 Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Courtney Barnett.
Everett, and you're listening to The First Time here on 6 Music. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments that made them who they are today. And this week we're joined by a singer, guitarist and songwriter whose gift for storytelling and laid-back delivery has slowly found its way from her home in Australia to a global audience of devotees, picking up awards and universal critical acclaim. I'm very pleased to welcome my guest on The First Time this week, Courtney Barnett. You just heard Crippling Self-Doubt and a General Lack of Confidence from Courtney's 2018 album, Tell Me How You Really Feel. And over the next hour, Courtney does just that. We talk about her earliest influences, her obsession with the guitar, and how her lyrical writing process is a shifting and changing thing. But I started off by asking, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time she was aware of music?
I grew up with a lot of, my parents listened to a lot of music. Mum listened to a lot of classical, dad listened to a lot of jazz. So I just remember that around the house.
Was music sort of treated with a bit of reverence? Was it like, oh, we're putting a record on now? Or was it just kind of something that was about?
It was kind of about, yeah, on the weekends, you know, they'd put on CDs while they were doing things around the house. It wasn't completely like a sit down moment and talking about things and really soaking it in, but it was definitely like, you know, valued and excited. Yeah. And my dad used to like air drum around the house to the music, you know.
any specific songs that pop into your head from him air drumming?
I think it was Cripper and Rich.
Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, yeah. I had that record. It's an amazing album.
And it's like a drum-off album, and my dad's like a closet drummer. So I remember that vividly from my childhood.
We'll be right back. Yeah, that's so weird. My dad had that record as well, Gene Krupa versus Buddy Rich. And yeah, I when I became like tried to become a drummer, that was the record that I'd always put on and think, what's the point? There's no point. These guys are just too good. I'm just going to stop. Because you had influence from your brother as well, didn't you? This was kind of, it's that great thing where there's another family member kind of feeding stuff through to you.
Yeah, definitely. So my brother's 4 years older than me, so naturally I kind of looked up to him, and everything that he did I thought was amazing. I just soaked in everything that he, you know, listened to as he went through his kind of phases.
What sort of thing can you remember him being really into and you picking up on? Because if you've got an elder sibling, it always makes an impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was the 90s, I guess. We had a neighbour who, he would make us mixtapes, so then we would listen to his music, and then I would listen to the music, like, through my brother's kind of bedroom wall as well. So I do remember vividly that song, You're Unbelievable.
By EMF.
Yeah, I don't even know anything about them except that song.
I don't think you're the only person in the world that has that opinion about them. Yeah, they know the song, but not much else. I need you. You're unbelievable. What about your first record that you bought then, the first album that you owned? Tell me a bit about, what was that?
I'm pretty sure the first record I bought was Nirvana Nevermind.
Oh, there you go. Sorted.
Yeah, and that was, again, my brother. I think he maybe even told me to buy it or something like that.
You like this, go and buy it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a favourite. We really only gathered a few CDs and then had those mixtapes to start with, and we listened to things on repeat, like we probably had 10 CDs. I'm so happy, 'cause today found my friends in my head. I'm so ugly, that's okay, 'cause so are you. We'll go miss Sunday morning, 'cause every day. Candles in our days, 'cause I found God.
I mean, when did you start thinking like, okay, I like music, maybe this is something that I could start doing? You talked about hearing, it's a Paul Kelly song when you were at school, wasn't it? I think you've talked about that being kind of a moment where you start to think about, well, songs can be stories.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it probably started with playing guitar, and I think, yeah, my brother started playing guitar, so I kind of started to learn, and then maybe we got the internet for the first time, and I like would sit there and look up, you know, guitar chords, and I realized, wow, I can play these songs, kind of like a very, very simple version of these songs that I love. I can kind of play them in my bedroom, and that was so exciting to me. It was like this whole new world. I just was so obsessed with music, I guess, as a kid, and then I started kind of making my own songs from there. And yeah, maybe the Paul Kelly, that was, you know, in a class in school, the teacher kind of printed the lyrics, and we had to go through the lyrics kind of sentence by sentence.
I get it.
So that was the first time I really kind of, I just remember it really hitting me. I was like, oh wow, he could have just said, I walked down the road and saw a car, but he did it in this other way that was a lot more interesting. Came in on a Sunday, every muscle aching, walking in slow motion, like he'd just been here. Did they have a future? Would he know his children?
Let's choose one of the artists on your list. Joni Mitchell. When did you first fall in love with Joni Mitchell?
Kind of later in life. I mean, I feel like really strongly only in the kind of last few years. But she's, yeah, I'm not quite sure. I remember one day I was driving with my auntie and Big Yellow Taxi came on the radio, but it was her singing it. And I had only ever heard the... I had only ever heard the Counting Crows version. So I don't know what year that was, but it was a hit around that time. And so I heard her singing it and I was like, wow, this is a great cover of that song. Yeah, and I was like, I'm loving this. And then, so that was kind of my introduction to Joni Mitchell, a very kind of roundabout, embarrassing story now, but I'm so glad that happened. They paid paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid paradise and put up a parking lot.
The people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. The pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Who was the first band that you played with? Because, like, it's always A, first bands normally have a terrible name, they rarely get out of a garage. The drummer's normally only the drummer because they've got a van. Like, there's certain things. Like, what was your first group?
I was always trying to convince people to make a band with me my whole life. As far as I can remember, like, all through school.
With success or not?
Not really. I mean, I feel like I was always convincing people and being kind of annoying. And they were kind of, you know, maybe doing it begrudgingly. Or there were little things throughout school that were really fun, like, I definitely made some sort of band in primary school, so I don't know what that, like 10, like 12-ish years old maybe. I always played guitar in all these bands, and then through high school we made a few other bands and we did like Red Hot Chili Peppers covers.
Nice.
Foo Fighters covers. I love the Foo Fighters. I play guitar in the jazz band at school, so I loved that as well. I think any excuse for me to play music, I was just so excited.
Who did you want to be in your mind's eye? Was there, like, did you have like the poster on the wall or someone you just like, that's my hero, I want to be like them?
Well, yeah, I think back then it was my first two musical loves, which was Jimi Hendrix and Kurt Cobain.
Yeah,
which I think a pretty good one still. If you can just get your then come on across to me. We'll hold hands and then we'll watch the sunrise from the bottom of the sea. But first, are you experienced? Or have you ever been experienced? Well,
Let's do another artist from your list. Beverly Glenn Copeland. This is what was great for me is I didn't know anything about Beverly, and then I've been doing my research. You've kind of opened me up to this amazing artist. Incredible. Yeah. I was listening to Ever New this morning. It's just the most... Yeah, tell me a bit about first hearing their music and kind of... Because the story is fascinating as well, but you can kind of explain a bit more.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how... it might have even been through my manager, Nick, might have sent me a record by maybe one of the like reissue. And then I was curating this festival called Sonic City, and I got to just choose all my favorite artists. And
nice.
And Glenn was touring, and I got to choose him for my lineup. And that was the first time I got to see him perform, and it was so incredible. It was one of the most amazing shows I've ever seen. So I just love that when everything kind of lines up for whatever reason in the universe, and you discover someone, and then it was just the perfect timing of like being able to be excited and kind of consume everything at once, and then to be able to see like the live show. It was exciting.
Welcome to spring, the summer rain.
What was the first official kind of release that got put out that your name was kind of on it? You know, your kind of first professional credit. What would that be?
I think recording-wise, it was actually my own. Like, I was doing my solo stuff, you know, since I was 18 or something. Kept doing that, but then at the same time, I joined, like, this band called Rapid Transit, just playing guitar. My friend Chris, he was this amazing, incredible songwriter. And so I loved playing in that band, just playing second guitar, like lead guitar, and just playing all these weird songs that he'd written. And like he would show me all these cool tunings. And then I played in another band called Immigrant Union, which was a country band. They were friends of mine as well. And I just played slide guitar. I kind of learnt how to do that as I was going. My friend Rob, who's one of the songwriters, he was like, can you play slide guitar? Do you want to join our band? And I was like, yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, I will. And I will learn how to do that.
Tell me a bit about that moment, yeah, when the EPs were put together, the kind of double EP came out, which would have been 2013, like, and all of a sudden... Because it, from the outside, it always seems like all of a sudden, whereas behind the scenes, it's been the opposite of that. You know, what was that like?
To me, I guess it feels like I've kind of been, you know, constantly at something. Like, I've always loved making music, and just that journey of, like, discovering how to play guitar better or how to write better songs, or, you know, even my journey with singing was such a long, slow... Yeah. Shy kind of like I only started singing in front of people 8 years after I started playing guitar, so it was a bit of a slow journey. But yeah, I guess so. To me, you know, it all just feels part of this beautiful thing that just took a bit of time, but it was great. I think just trying to soak in like all those experiences as they come along the way. You know, it's always funny looking back at certain moments, and when 1 year kind of feels like 10 years, it's hard to kind of judge the time that passes.
But it's interesting, yeah, what you talk about singing. It's surely, if something takes a while before you know, to use the kind of cliche, find your voice, it's kind of better if it takes a long time, because when it's, you know, it's not like something you've just sort of happened across. It's something you've thought about, something you've tried, you know, until you found the way that you want to do it. So that kind of delay, that's a good thing, I reckon, you know?
Oh, definitely, like, in hindsight. But, you know, in that moment when, like, I don't know, I was so, as a kid, I think, or even just a younger version of me, just very kind of impatient, wanting things to happen, and, like, you know, I get an idea in my head and I want something to happen straight away, and it's hard in those moments to, like, to see some version of the future or how something might, like, work out. I get a little bit, like, stuck in that kind of tunnel vision moment.
Yeah.
But yeah,
this has to happen now, this has to happen right, this has to be yeah, perfect, and then I can do the next thing and get stressed about that as well. Is that the kind of, is that the creative process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I think, just like, I've just noticed as well, like, we put a lot of kind of stress on ourselves, and it has to be, I think we tell ourselves this story that, like, it has to be right the first time, or you mess up your chances, or, you know, it won't happen again if you do it wrong, or whatever those stories are that we all kind of tell ourselves, that, like, yeah, fear of failure kind of thing.
Remember about recording that first album? Sometimes I sit and think, and sometimes I just sit, because I remember reading about it at the time, and one of the things that I really liked about it was, although, you know, you tried to make it as spontaneous as possible with the band and really kind of make it, and it does sound like that. It really does sound like we've only just heard these songs and we're playing them now, which I think is a brilliant thing to capture on a record. What do you remember from those sessions?
From my memory, we rehearsed for, I can't remember now, a week or two, and then we went straight into the studio. Brilliant. it was quite a kind of quick, well, I quite enjoyed it like that. I still have always kind of slightly stuck to that rule. I've never really done the opposite of, like, touring new songs for a year or two and then taking them to the studio. I don't know why, I just haven't. I think I just love capturing that kind of slightly awkward, naive version of a song. And, you know, every song I've ever recorded, I'm proud of whatever I've done, but they always evolve and they always kind of end up sounding not better, but just more realized as time goes on. And, like, you can't sit with a song forever, like, and never, well, you can, but you can't be constantly working on it until it's perfect, or it will just never be released.
Yeah. And then, like, I mean, obviously that record did so well, and you got trophies and awards, and kind of generally there was this whole kind of hoo-ha, and rightly deserved because it's such a brilliant record. I mean, did you enjoy that?
The hoo-ha?
Yeah, the hoo-ha.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a funny, strange experience. But, I mean, of course, it's nice to get recognition for things that you do that you... Most humans want some sort of validation of what they do and what they create and why they exist and all those things. It's always nice to know that something that you work so hard on and put a lot of emotional energy into, it's just so nice to know that it connects with someone, with anyone.
Yeah.
It's a really nice thing.
You said we should look out further. I guess it wouldn't hurt us. We don't have to be around all these coffee shops. Now we got that percolator. Never made a latte greater. I'm saving $23 a week. We see police arresting a man with his hand in a bag. How's that for first impressions? This place seems depressing. It's a Californian bungalow in a cul-de-sac. It's got parking, or a lot of room for storage if you've just got one. And it's going pretty cheap, you say. Well, it's a deceased estate. Aren't the pressed metal ceilings great? Then I see the handrail in the shower, of those canisters for coffee, tea and flour, and a photo of a young man in a van in Vietnam. And I can't think of floorboards anymore, whether the front room faces south or north. And I wonder what she bought it for.
Preston from Courtney Barnett's album Sometimes I Sit and Think and Sometimes I Just Sit.
Six Music.
Alone at home in the darkness with
Hello, this is The First Time with me, Matt Everett. This is the show where we ask an influential musician about the pivotal musical moments that made them who they are today. And this week I'm talking to Australian singer, songwriter and guitarist Courtney Barnett, an artist who it seems lyrics and stories just pour out of. So let's head back to our conversation as I ask about her writing process.
I think I go through phases, different writing phases and different kind of process. I try to be very proactive and sit down at 9 a.m. and, you know...
You go to work.
Yeah, I've tried that, and I think, you know, there's something great about it, and I think a lot of it is just kind of circumstance or where I just happen to be in my life. I think the biggest thing is just showing up and and writing and working, like, as a kind of constant exercise and forever kind of trying to get better, trying to understand what it is.
Mm. There was a really nice line written, I can't remember who did the interview, but they described you as like being a journalist embedded in your own life, which I thought was quite sweet. Do you have piles of notebooks with, like, constantly documenting things that are unfolding around you, or does it all kind of... Because the image is like, yes, she's just recalling with, you know, beautiful lyrical detail exact things that have happened, but I guess it doesn't work quite like that.
I have this ideal kind of version of myself and myself as a writer, and it's not true. Like, I have gone through phases of keeping notebooks, but I haven't probably haven't written in a notebook for years. I don't know. I was writing on a typewriter every 1 to 10 pages every day, just to kind of force something out.
Really? All on a typewriter as well, like properly fingers on keys? That's great.
Yeah, but then one day I wake up and I get distracted. I do other things, and then I break the pattern and I don't get back into it for another 8 months or something. So it's not, I've never kind of stuck very long with a specific pattern or routine. And even the new album, I guess I did keep a notebook that was essentially just for lyrics and poems. Oh, and I started writing down my dreams a lot. I think I found that a lot more interesting.
Yeah, there's that little moment when you can remember them and then they're gone. And then there's often the thing where, to the person that's having the dream, it's fantastic and fascinating and enormously telling, and to other people it's like, yeah, don't really care. But it worked, this dream diary. God, that's a terrible phrase.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the main reasons I do write is for me to understand certain things within myself. So it is a kind of constant exercise, and the dream thing, it is really, no one really wants to hear other people's dreams, but it's very, I think it's a good exercise for people to do on your own. Writing doesn't have to equal anything. It doesn't have to equal a book or a song or an album.
Okay.
Like, the point of writing is to discover something, and hopefully it leads towards something else, and maybe it does lead towards some sort of outcome, but it doesn't always. A lot of the time there's a lot of pages or books that I'm not going to say they're pointless, but, you know, they all add up.
Leonard Cohen always used to say that, didn't he? I think Tom York's the same. They're like, oh, I had like 18 verses I wrote for this song, and only two of them got used, but I had to write all the other ones to get there, sort of thing, you know?
Yes, that's the perfect, it's the perfect example. Like, I remember whenever someone asked me how, it's always the funniest conversation, like, what did you do today? And I, you know, I'm like, I worked, and everyone knows what I do, like, my friends know what I do for a living, but they're like, what do you mean you worked? I'm like, well, I did what I do, or I worked on a song. But, you know, sometimes a successful day of writing for me is just one great line.
Yeah.
And that might even be 1 week's worth of, like, success, you know. But, yeah, you do. You have to write the other stuff. You have to write the bad stuff to find the good stuff. And you have to go and see live music that you don't like so that you know what you do like, you know, all those things.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Everything can't just be perfect all the time. I got drunk and fell asleep atop the sheets, but luckily I left the heater on. And in my dreams I wrote the best song that I've ever written. Can't remember how it goes. I stayed drunk and fell awake. I was cycling on a plane and far away. I heard you say you like me. We drifted to a party cool. The people went to Artie's.
sun. And in the taxi home, I'll sing you a Triffid song.
Kate LeBron is someone that's on your list. Tell me about, I mean, she's just clearly brilliant, but why is she on your first time artist list then?
I'm just such a big fan of Kate. I think she's one of the greatest writers, one of the greatest musicians of our time. Yeah, it's just really exciting to see what she does each time she releases an album and where it goes and just how it just gets better. You like when you think something's so great and then it does just keep getting better. I just think that's so exciting. I find her to be a very inspiring artist and person. And I think I love as well just the journey of my discovering her over the years. Like my friend Dan Luscombe, who played on a couple of he helped produce some of my first records, he sent me her album as a gift. And then I didn't listen to it for ages. And then someone else showed me, I think it was Crab Days, and it was just this very, very slow, like it takes me a while to get things done or to soak things in. And I just remember like all these people whose music tastes I really admired kept recommending Kate LeBond to me, you know, slowly but surely. I started listening to her. I think she's one of the best.
And so, well, we've got a new record. There's a new record coming out. Things take time. What's if the albums are a family, if they're brothers and sisters, how does this one fit into the home? is it the black sheep of the family? Is it the boisterous little sister? What is it? How does it fit in?
Oh, that's a great question. It's such a nice way to be asked that question. It's so hard for me to like honestly be able to judge those things, because to me it just feels, you know, first of all, technically it's my third album, but to me it kind of feels like my fifth release. Yeah. Because I did my first EP, my second EP, and then my first album. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's whatever, whatever it is, that's what it is. But to me it's like this fifth chapter, I guess, in a way. And it just kind of feels like a continuation, but an exciting one. Like it's, I guess they're all, each album is kind of learning more, you know, maybe letting go of certain ideas and trying to experiment with different ideas. And it feels like a very joyous and exciting album to me, and maybe, you know, a stepping stone. I find it all very mysterious and exciting, and a bit of a kind of maze that you don't realize you actually figured out the answer a couple of turns ago until you get to the end. Or, you know, it never really quite makes sense, or songs make sense 5 years later.
Right.
I like to just kind of try to stay open to whatever it offers me.
When you first listened back to it, like the finished thing, what was your kind of overwhelming feeling? Was it joy? Was it relief? Was it like, okay, on to the next thing?
I did feel very joyous when it was kind of finished. And I think this album was a little bit more spaced out in how it was made. It always feels so satisfying to kind of hear everything come together. And I think when I'm working on an album, I get so obsessed with it. I'm working on the songs every day and listening to it everywhere I go. And it's quite kind of
all encompassing.
Yeah. It really is. And then, you know, the mixing process, I'm constantly making changes and blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as it's done,
yeah.
I feel like everything is how I want it to be, then I feel like I can just let it go. And I can let it go and exist in the world and be, it can be whatever people want it to be. And I love that. I love that process. Because I think if you tinker any further with it, then you could tinker on an album forever. Like you can constantly be changing things for so long, like, and it would never be right. It would never be completely right. It would always have something else to change. So it's nice. It's always a nice feeling to just peacefully let it go.
Yeah. And the final question, what's the last song that we should play? What should we go out on? It can be something of yours, something of someone else's. There's a couple of names on the list we haven't talked about. Gillian Welsh and Dirty Three are still. Arthur Russell we haven't talked about. But what should we finish on? The choice is yours. What's the last song?
Oh, maybe Arthur Russell then, because I love him. Let's do That's Us, Wild Combination. It's a good one.
Then that's the song we'll finish on. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you. Thank you, Courtney.
Oh, no worries. Thank you so much. It was so fun.
That's us. Before we got there, that's morning time. Before we got there, that's morning time. Before we got there, that's morning time. Before we got there. I just wanna be wherever you are. Hard as that can be, it's never too hard. This hard love to see by its own light. Love inside of me, it's working at night. Seconds before I see you in the dark. This time that I assume coming to seconds to this time that I'm trying to be with. It's a big old world with nothing in it. I can't wait to see you another minute. It's a wild combination. It's a wild combination. It's a wild. It's a loving, baby. It's a talk in the dark. It's a walk in the morning. It's a wild combination. It's a wild. It's a wild. It's a loving, baby. It's a talk in the dark. It's a walk in the morning. That's it. Before we got there. Before we got there, that's it. Before we got there, that's morning time. Before we got there, for a prize, push up and be part of it all. Surfing, swimming. We'll be right back.
letters before we got there. That's morning time before we got
there. BBC Radio 6 Music. I know my